What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. This is your host, Brandon DeCruz, and today is episode 97, where we're going to discuss the topic of calorie intake for muscle gain. We're also going to compare large versus small surpluses and their effects on muscle growth and fat gain. So I just flew in last night from being a guest speaker at the first annual Against the Grain Nutrition Coaching and Education Seminar, where presented on the ins and outs of nutrition for maximizing lean mass gain while minimizing fat gain, because that's generally what people are looking to do. When they're looking to build tissue, it isn't with the intention of just gaining weight. It's with the intention of gaining lean mass and mitigating excess fat gain. And I spoke on how I periodize lean building phases with clients, help them gain muscle, look better, feel better, and maintain their metabolic health in the process. We had an incredible turnout for the event, and I was fortunate enough to meet some of you listeners in person, which is something I genuinely look forward to. So for those of you that I met down in Nashville, thank you so much for your support of the show and also for the feedback that you provided me with regarding what you get out of listening to these episodes as well as out of my presentation. And I have to say, it was a really cool experience for me to meet both coaches and fitness enthusiasts who said that they have tuned into a lot of the episodes of the show and have taken a ton of value out of it. And it also, you know, to receive a ton of positive feedback on the talk I did there and how I was able to take a lot of complex research and data and break it down into comprehensible information that was easy to understand and made sense in terms of being able to practically apply it to their own lives and to their clients. That's something that I really, it means a lot, honestly. It's something that it's taken many years of both working with individuals. I mean, I'm 11 years into coaching. I'm 18 years into training. I had a fitness career for 14 years at this point. So, you know, that's an acquired skill, but it's something I've worked very hard and very diligently at. And it's something that, you know, we're constantly trying to refine our skills. And generally, you know, I'm working with people one-on-one. So it's a very individualistic approach. And so I do Zoom consultations with, you know, people one-on-one, but getting in front of a large crowd is something that I'll to be completely honest with you guys. It's very outside of my comfort zone. I am naturally introverted. And so I am really good at people one-on-one. So I was an in-person trainer for multiple years before I started my online business. And I'm used to being able to really engage and connect with individuals one-on-one, but in a large group setting, it's difficult because I'm always thinking, my mind's going a million miles a minute, which is most likely why I speak so fast. But you know, I'm always trying to make sure that people feel heard. And it's difficult when there's 80 plus people in a room and you're trying to answer all these different questions. But I really do appreciate the feedback that I received, both in regards to the presentation, then also the podcast. And, you know, I've come back home revitalized and even more motivated to continue helping others in their goals of improving both their physiques and their quality of lives, as these types of events always provide me with feedback regarding what I do well, and then also what I could do better moving forward. So I'm going to be taking both the positive feedback and the constructive criticism that I received down in Nashville, and will be working to improve both as a coach and as someone who tries to empower his clients through education. Because ultimately, the reason why I've done hundreds of podcasts over the years and why I've legitimately not missed a day of posting some type of educational content since 2017 is because my primary goal is to help others, especially the clients I work with and many of the individuals who I've coached over the years, are very goal-oriented and driven individuals who are high achievers and are interested in not only improving their physiques, but also learning throughout the process. So although I keep in close contact with my clients, I've received so much feedback over the years in regards to the fact that when I'm able to speak of a topic on a podcast and really expand upon it, and it helps with reinforcing a lot of the things that I'm working with a client. And then it helps them with really understanding this in a deeper level, because I'm putting this in a long form content platform like a podcast. And it's helped them not only understand what they're doing better, but it also helps to reinforce what we're doing and serves as kind of like a reminder, which ultimately fosters better buy-in, execution, and consistency, which heavily influences the results and progress my clients get. So before I go into the topic for today, I just wanted to thank every single one of you out there who listen to the show and share it, as well as those who reach out and provide me with feedback about it, as I'm the type of person who's either all in or all out when I commit to a project, as I can't half-ass anything I'm engaged in. And if it weren't for so many people who have reached out and shared how the information I've put out has helped them, and if it weren't for the clients I work with who have truly benefited from the show, I wouldn't have continued to do it, especially now that I've taken it over completely. As it's something that takes up a lot, much more time, effort, and mental space than many would realize, as a lot of people who listen to podcasts, and this is something that I needed to go down to Nashville and speak with some of these prominent podcasters to really get this, because I had heard things and I had had some certain discussions, or I'd been on other people's podcasts, and I had realized that I was getting emails from an assistant, or they had a producer that was doing things, or they were letting me know that they were outsourcing the audio to an editor. And sometimes even it was to my benefit, because there was times that I would get reels or I would get content back, and it wasn't from the person that I had spoken to that ran the podcast. And so I didn't really realize to the depth. I knew that this existed, but really when it came down to it, most people don't realize that a lot of the educational podcasts that you hear and you listen to, they have a very large team. So I met a few very prominent podcasters this weekend and was actually amazed at how large their podcast teams are. So, for example, I met an individual who runs a weekly podcast, and he has an employee who handles all the research interpretation. So it's a separate person that goes through all the data. He has another employee who handles the deep dive into the background of whatever or whoever guest they're going to be having on, whether that be going through their content, be going through studies that this person has produced. So if it's a researcher, or he said the most common is he gets book authors on quite commonly or quite frequently, and they'll read the entire book and give him a synopsis so that he is able to allocate his mental energy towards other things. He also had a producer who handles his sound and a podcast editor. So including him, that's a team of five individuals, just for making a single weekly podcast. Whereas this podcast and every single topic that I've ever spoken about on a podcast, that's all me. And it's been from my own experience being, having coached for the last 11 years, and also the heavy amount of research that I've done over the past 18 years that I've been training and interested in nutrition. So just, it's something that it does take a lot of time, and it's really me trying to put out good and useful information out into the universe, and then also just really trying to have a positive impact, because we're in an age where there's so much misinformation and disinformation, and I'm trying to cut through the noise without doing the call out videos or the controversial, claims and things of that sort, which that's just not my style. I would rather try to drown out some of the bad misinformation and disinformation out there by putting out positive, information that's both factual, but is also going to have a positive impact on those who it reaches. All right, so on to today's show. So I had originally, and I got to be honest about this, I had originally recorded a short version of this episode about 2 weeks prior to having Dr. Eric Helms on the show to cover his weight gain study. And I had initially planned to release the original version of this episode first, prior to the episode that I did with Eric. However, seeing as we didn't get to cover all the topics I had planned for that episode, I decided to scrap the original episode I had recorded. And essentially, what I did was I added a few additional aspects to this episode on the topic of calorie intake for muscle growth, especially as this was one of the main questions I received this weekend from attendees of the seminar that I presented at. And in the episode with Eric, which was released just last week, so last Friday, we released it, but we recorded this multiple weeks ago. We covered two studies I hadn't expected to cover, which were the Rozenek study, which was like the newbie weight gain study, and then the Smith study. And Eric did a phenomenal job covering those studies and how they inform us about the calorie intake that can benefit us when we first start training. But seeing as the Rozenek study was done on completely untrained individuals, and then the Smith study was done on early novices who had 6 months of training experience on average, I wanted to dive into more of the research around how our calorie intake impacts how much muscle and fat mass we gain during a building phase when we are intermediate or advanced trainees. As the vast majority of individuals I work with and I coach have way more than 6 months of training experience in the gym. So some of the research looking at calorie intake that is done on young college age individuals who are brand spanking new to training and what can benefit them just isn't applicable to anyone besides someone who is literally just starting to train and is a newbie. And honestly, that's just generally not my audience, nor is it the clientele that I work with. So I really wanted to make this beneficial for my clients as well as for those of you who listen. And a lot of times when I interact with listeners, it's people that are a couple years into training. They're at that intermediate stage, and they've hit a wall or they've hit a plateau, and either it's a lack of knowledge or a lack of execution or not knowing how to practically apply these things. And so that's where really my expertise within coaching comes into play. I'm just at a different stage in my career where, yes, I do work with newer trainees, but it's generally never someone that has never picked up a weight in their life. And a lot of those studies, that is what they're most applicable to. So we have to be very specific, and we also have to be very strategic about what research we disseminate information on, and also think about the target population in which we're speaking to. So that's what I really want to do. And so this week's episode is going to be part three of my Nutrition for Muscle Gain series, which started with episode 94, where I discussed building versus cutting phases, and then episode 95, where I covered the benefits of taking a lean building approach versus a dirty bulking approach for gaining muscle. So today we're going to compare and contrast the effects of taking large versus small calorie surpluses and how these different intakes impact how much muscle and fat you gain once you're past that early novice stage of training and you've passed the newbie gains phase of your training experience. So the first thing I want to cover on this week's episode, before I go over the best available research that we have on calorie intake for muscle gain, are some of the misconceptions around the calorie intake and surplus size needed for gaining muscle. And my goal when working with a client, especially when we're aiming to improve their body composition from a muscularity and shape perspective, is not just to gain weight or increase their scale weight, but to increase their level of muscle mass while minimizing excess fat gain, which is why I take a lean building approach, which I detailed in both episodes 94 and 95 of this podcast. And a lot of times people simplify muscle gain and fat loss down to just calories. However, gaining muscle isn't just about our calories. As our calorie intake determines our change in body mass, aka what we see the scale do, but there are other finer details that need to be taken into consideration when we're trying to change and improve our body composition. And this is why it's important to realize that although eating enough calories is supportive of muscle growth, the predominant determinant of whether you gain muscle or not is your ratio of muscle protein synthesis to muscle protein breakdown. And in order to gain muscle tissue, our level of muscle protein synthesis must exceed our level of muscle protein breakdown so we can accrue more muscle protein over time, which is what's needed to add and to build new muscle tissue. And that's why it's important to realize that there are two main methods in which we can increase our muscle protein synthesis levels, which is A, going through, you know, and engaging in hard resistant training and progressive training at that, and then also by maintaining a high protein intake. And as you know, this is because both of these robustly increase our rates of muscle protein synthesis, especially when we pair them together. So they have independent effects, but they also have synergistic effects. And this is important to note because you can eat an excess of calories and take in a large surplus daily, but if you're not training hard enough to provide a robust enough of a training stimulus to your body to cause muscle growth, and if you're not eating enough protein, you can eat in a surplus all you want, but you're still not going to maximize your ability to gain muscle, as we need to ensure we pair progressive resistance training with adequate protein intake to maximize our ability to gain muscle. And that's, you know, this is why I've said multiple times throughout this series that you cannot force feed muscle growth by just cranking up your calorie intake, as all that'll do is increase your likelihood of gaining fat, which is something that's been seen in countless overfeeding studies where they have participants eat hundreds of calories over their maintenance. So they're in an excess of calories. They're in a surplus. They're in a state of anabolism, essentially. Yet, due to having a low protein intake and not training in a progressive manner, these individuals actually lose lean body mass many times, and then also gain fat mass in the process, despite being in a surplus and a sufficient calorie availability. So it's not like you're just going to be able to eat your way to a muscular physique if you aren't training hard on a consistent basis and eating sufficient protein on a daily basis. And this is something that many overlook, as many make the mistake and make the assumption that if they push up their calories and eat a ton to gain muscle, that it's going to lead to pure increases in muscle mass. But many don't account for the increase in fat mass that may come with that type of approach. Another common misconception I see people under is that the more advanced and experienced they get in their training journey, the more they should push their calories up to do as much as possible to gain muscle and push towards their genetic ceiling or their maximum muscular potential. However, when you've been training for a long period of time, your rate of muscle growth will actually slow down significantly, especially as compared to when you were brand new to training and you just got into the gym, as that's the period in which you have the highest potential to gain muscle at a rapid rate. Because think about it like this, the stimulus of training when you first start is such a novel one that basically anything can help you grow. So increasing calories, you're going to have so much ability to transition or to essentially turn those calories into muscle because you are so far from your genetic ceiling because you have yet to gain much muscle mass. And this is why we refer to this period as the newbie gains phase. What I found to work better with clients is to scale down the size of the surplus I use with a client the more advanced they get and the more advanced they are, because with intermediate and advanced trainees, the rate of muscle growth is slower as compared to new trainees. So if they try to increase calories constantly and just try to eat more and more, that generally doesn't lead to extra muscle gain, but rather leads to a situation where they're in a massive excess of calories. That excess energy then needs to either be burned or stored, and in many cases, the path of least resistance for the body to take is to store that extra energy in the form of body fat, which is why we see so many people that push up their calories excessively or really try to force feed muscle growth, they end up just fat. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. And so we also have to keep in consideration that we just don't have any data that shows that a massive surplus stimulates the increase of muscle more than a smaller surplus. But we do know that a large surplus does increase fat mass more, which is why I avoid this excessive approach of force feeding food and trying to force feed muscle growth, as building muscle is a slow process that we can't rush and we shouldn't try to. The next topic I want to cover is the rate of gain for muscle growth during a lean building phase. And many times I'll be asked the exact amount of a calorie surplus that I would recommend someone go into to maximize muscle gain. And the issue with this question is there is no generic answer that I can provide that would apply to every client that I work with, let alone every person out there that listens to the show. And so for me, when I receive these questions, I try to go into more of the nuanced aspects of this because I never want to do a disservice by just throwing out an answer to throw out an answer. I think a lot of times people want a simple answer to things, and I do understand that, but if we simplify things too much to the point that they're not even applicable, that's it's senseless, it's irrelevant, and it's also just not helpful. And so there are so many factors that I take into consideration when determining the size of a surplus that I use with each of my clients, and it differs from individual to individual. And so that's why I couldn't possibly answer that question without having experience working with you and seeing how hard and frequently you train, how adaptive your metabolism is in terms of whether you have a spendthrift or a thrifty metabolic phenotype, and how predisposed you are towards gaining muscle and or fat, your specific physique goals, your biofeedback, like what state you're in currently, how active you are on a daily basis, your starting body composition prior to entering a building phase, your current level of muscle mass, and then how much muscle you wish to gain, your metabolic health status, your insulin sensitivity, and your nutrient partitioning capabilities, and then also your experience with tracking your food intake and how precise and experienced you are. And over time, I found that the best way to approach surplus size with each individual client I work with is to scale it to their training experience and level of advancement, which will differ from individual to individual, as no two clients come to me at the exact same point in their body transformation journey. So I look to, I look at the size of a surplus I use with a client as a sliding scale, essentially based on their training experience, their level of advancement, and their muscular development at the time that we start working together, or we decide to go into a building phase. And for those of you who are purely interested in gaining lean tissue, minimizing body fat gain, and improving your physique in the process, I believe the most effective way to go about this is by taking a more moderate approach towards the surplus you use during a building phase. So instead of providing a calorie surplus value, I like to look at this in terms of weekly and monthly rates of gain. And so generally, I shoot for between a 0.25 to 0.5% rate of gain per week, which generally equates to a 1 to 2% rate of body weight gain per month with my clients based on various factors I mentioned before, such as their training age, their current body fat level, and how close they are to their ceiling of muscle building potential. So with novices, I'll err more on the side of the 0.5% per week or that 2% rate of gain per month, and will use a bit of a higher surplus or a larger surplus to achieve that, as they have a higher potential for synthesizing lean tissue. But with more of my intermediate and advanced clients, which is the majority of the clients that I work with right now, I'll aim for more around that 0.25% per week, which is a 1% of body weight gain per month, as this rate ensures that they gain predominantly muscle tissue rather than an unnecessary amount of fat mass, which will eventually need to spend more time dieting after to get off. And so basically, the more advanced you get, the slower rate of gain, slower rate you should be gaining at, as muscle growth happens slower. And although many want to gain as, you know, gain as quickly as possible, if you have a few years of training under your belt and your ultimate goal is to build a more muscular physique that allows you to look good, feel good, and function well, taking a slower approach to building phases is more beneficial, as it lowers the amount of time you spend dieting per year, as you have less fat to cut it off at the end of your building phases, which is something I've seen with my own clients who I've worked with for an extended period of time and gone through, you know, fat loss and building phases with. And seeing as building muscle is a slow process that doesn't occur overnight, what I like to do and what I look to do is to track my clients' body mass changes over time in conjunction with many other things, but I'll speak on body mass first. So for many of my clients, what I'll do is within their programs, and this is something I do on the back end, I actually don't even tell them this objectively. And the reason for that is sometimes and many of times, honestly, people get fixated on numbers, but these are metrics that I'm taking into consideration and adjusting based off of. And so what I'll do is on their data sheets within my end, on my back end of my system, I'll have like monthly body mass targets, and then I'm tracking their training over time. So I'm looking at their body weight changes over time and their training performance over time. And I will say that the monthly body mass target is something that I tend to employ more often with the men that I work with than the women, as I found that setting a specific monthly body weight increase target with the women I work with has often caused them to become hyper focused on the scale, which isn't conducive for their mental state. And I also find that the population of women that I work with are more likely to recomp throughout our time working together. And often this recomp causes their body mass to go up slower over time because they're gaining muscle while they're losing body fat. So shooting for a specific rate of gain target with many of the women I work with, who I'm taking through their first calculated lean building phase with, just isn't always applicable. But nevertheless, say I have a client who's intermediate or advanced, I'll often shoot for a 1% monthly rate of gain per month. And with that, I also want to make sure that their training performance is improving over that month. So say a client is 150 pounds at the start of a building phase. A month into that building phase, they should be around, say, 151.5 or somewhere within that area. And keep in mind that body weight massively fluctuates. So we're talking averages over time. And the other thing that I'm looking for is they should be able to lift the same load for either more reps or handle higher loads within their target rep range going into month two of a training cycle as compared to month one. So how I like to see clients do this is through a double progression method, meaning they try to add one rep per movement every week or every other week. And once they exceed their target rep range, we increase load and go back down to the bottom of their rep range target. The next question I want to answer is why I use a rate of gain target for muscle growth instead of advising a specific calorie surplus amount, like hitting a 400 calorie surplus per week and I or per day. And so I like using a rate of gain per month target instead of a specific calorie surplus target because the surplus we create in the beginning of a building phase will not stay a surplus for the entire phase. So say that I was to tell every single person, go into a calculated 400 calorie surplus at week one of your building phase. This doesn't mean that this will remain a net 400 calorie surplus, which is what many don't realize. And as you build muscle tissue, it increases both your resting metabolic rate and your total daily energy expenditure. So you not only burn more calories at rest, but also throughout the course of the day. So by building muscle and also progressing your training performance, you upregulate your ability to expend and burn calories, which is why coaching is an ever-evolving process where I frequently monitor and assess my clients' progress and then make calculated adjustments based on their rate of progress, their body weight changes, and their biofeedback. So for example, I just recently had this conversation with a client of mine, Nalini, who has been in a lean building phase for the past 5 months. Throughout the course of this phase, she's built a good amount of muscle, especially in her lower body. And this past week, the energy intake she was at the last couple of weeks that initially had her gaining slowly and steadily each week is now her maintenance calorie intake, and her body weight has stabilized as a result. And this is not only due to the fact that she's gained muscle, but her training performance has improved over the course of this phase. So she's burning more calories per day. So what was once a surplus is now her maintenance intake, as our maintenance calorie intake is a range, which is never static or set in stone, but rather it's dynamic and it's something we can build up over time. And that's essentially what we've done throughout our time working together. So due to this upregulation in energy expenditure, I had to adjust her calorie intake up once again to ensure she's still in a slight surplus, as she's an experienced trainee, so I want to put her in the best position to gain muscle, as that's our current goal. And the best way to do that is to ensure she's at an optimal level of energy availability and has sufficient calories and fuel to fuel the muscle building process and continue progressing her training sessions, because that's what's going to lead to better progress over time. Now, the next topic I want to go through is the research we have comparing fast versus slow rates of weight gain and their effects on muscle growth and fat gain. And in intermediate and advanced trainees, the more body weight you gain per week, the faster you try to push up your weight during a building phase, the higher likelihood you're going to accrue extra fat mass, as there's a limit as to how much muscle you can gain per week as compared to when you were a beginner. And this is something we see in the best available research we have on this topic. So in 2013, a study was done on elite athletes from different Olympic sports who had qualified for the Norwegian national team to see the effects of different size surpluses on muscle gain and fat gain. Now, these were high-level athletes from different sports, but that doesn't mean that they were advanced in terms of their resistance training experience, as this was essentially a mix of athletes from different sporting backgrounds, including soccer athletes, volleyball players, rowing athletes, And the majority of the participants were actually ice hockey players. So on the group average, we can say that this study is looking at individuals who are elite at their sport, but most likely intermediate in terms of their resistance training experience, if that. In this study, they put all these athletes on a 4-day per week resistance training program designed to maximize muscle hypertrophy, where each body part was trained twice per week using an upper-lower body split. They also made sure that these athletes were in their off-season from their sports so that they would have enough time and energy to commit to their training schedule while also including their sport-specific conditioning work. So essentially, they were doing both resistance training and then also, say, cardiovascular work to stay in shape for their sport of choice. But they weren't engaging in actual competitions or actual games or any matches, things of that sort. And so in addition to the inclusion of the hypertrophy training program, they split them up into two different nutritional intervention groups for the duration of the training program, which lasted an average of 10 weeks. One group received nutrition counseling and were put into a large calorie surplus with the goal of gaining 0.7% of body weight per week. The other group was told to eat in a surplus, but to do so in an ad libitum fashion, meaning they basically ate to fullness rather than force feeding calories, so they were in a small and slight calorie surplus. Their results found that both groups gained a significant amount of lean mass via DEXA with no significant differences in muscle gain between the two groups, but the large surplus group gained 5.5 times more fat and 2 times more body weight than the small surplus group, with almost all of the body weight coming from the addition of fat mass, or with all the additional body weight coming from the addition of extra fat mass as compared to the small surplus group that was eating in a small surplus. So the large group gained 2.7 kilograms of body weight on average, whereas the small surplus group only gained 1.2 kilograms body weight on average. But the large surplus group also gained 1.1 kilograms of fat mass, whereas the small surplus group only gained 0.2 kilograms of fat mass. Now, here's the crazy thing. They initially wanted these groups to gain at a rate of 0.7% per week. Well, the large surplus group gained at a rate of 0.4% of body weight per week and gained 5.5 times more fat mass than the small surplus group, who gained at a rate of 0.2% per week, which is right in line with what I aim for with most of my clients. So like I alluded to previously, a lot of times with intermediate trainees, which is this is what they would fall into, I'm aiming for 0.25% per week. So let's think about it like this. If the large surplus group had actually pushed their calories even higher to meet that 0.7% weekly body weight rate of gain that they initially wanted them to gain at, they most likely would have just yielded even more fat gain. So this study found that there was no added benefit of eating in a large surplus as compared to a smaller surplus for muscle growth, as it basically led to the same gains of muscle mass, yet didn't have any other outcomes besides those individuals gaining significantly more body fat and body weight when eating in a larger surplus. So what we see in intermediate trainees is that using a slower rate of gain via a smaller surplus was enough to max out the muscle building effect of being in an energy surplus without adding extra fat, as going above a small surplus just contributed to fat gain in the large surplus group. And even in the conclusion of this paper, the author stated, and I actually pulled this from the study itself, athletes with nutritional guidance increase body weight more. However, excess energy intake in a weight gain protocol should be considered carefully due to undesirable increases in body fat, which essentially summarizes the fact that using a larger surplus and a faster rate of gain leads to similar increases in lean mass, but much larger increases in fat mass and body weight, which isn't something that many of us want out of a building phase. So this is where being more calculated and strategic with the approach that you take, as well as the surplus that you induce, is really beneficial when body composition improvement is your goal. The next topic I want to cover is the research we have on large versus moderate calorie surpluses and their effects on muscle gain and fat gain in advanced trainees. And the best study we have on advanced trainees was released in 2019. And in this study, they took competitive bodybuilders who had at least 1 year of competing under their belts and who were training with the goal of gaining muscle. And they split them into two groups, where one group was put in a high calorie surplus and the other group was put into a moderate calorie surplus. Throughout the course of the study, they had them train 6 days per week, hitting each muscle group twice per week. So their training program was solid in terms of being designed to maximize muscle hypertrophy, aka muscle growth, coupled with adequate energy availability in both groups. Another good part of this study was that their diets were designed by a nutritionist, and these were competitors. So their ability to adhere to the prescribed intakes was most likely much better than in most studies we have on less trained and less experienced populations. At the end of the study, they found that both groups gained a significant amount of fat-free mass. The high-calorie surplus group increased their fat-free mass by 3%, which came out to 2.4 kilograms. And the moderate calorie surplus group increased their fat-free mass by 1.5%, which came out to 1.2 kilograms. So if you were only to look at the increases in fat-free mass, you'd think to yourself that a larger surplus was better for gains. And that's why it's so important to read into the details of a study. However, the actual biggest differences that we see in this study are when we specifically look at the fat mass gain differences between groups. So the large calorie surplus group increased their fat mass by 12.4%, which came out to a 1.8 kilogram increase, whereas the moderate calorie surplus group increased their fat mass by 2.5%, which was a 0.3 kilogram increase. So the larger surplus group gained 2 times more fat-free mass, but they also gained 6 times the amount of fat mass as the moderate calorie surplus group. So when we look at their fat-free mass to fat mass ratio in terms of gains, the higher calorie surplus group gained at a rate of 4 parts fat-free mass to 3 parts fat mass, while the moderate calorie surplus group gained at a rate of 4 parts fat-free mass to 1 part fat mass, which is a drastic difference, as for the same amount of fat-free mass gain, the larger surplus group was gaining fat mass at 3 times the rate as the moderate calorie surplus group. So they weren't making lean gains by any means, which reinforces the fact that pushing a large surplus in those who are past the newbie stage of training leads to a much greater increase in fat mass accumulation. Now, the last research study I want to cover on today's podcast is the most recent study we have on how calorie intake impacts muscle and fat gain, which was published at the end of 2023 by Dr. Eric Helms and colleagues, who I just recently had on the podcast. And Eric and I covered many details of this study, especially from a limitations perspective. But I wanted to do a full review of the study to provide a more all-encompassing look at the results and how we can interpret them, which is something I was able to do better after not only reading the paper multiple times, but also speaking to Eric both on and off air. So in this study, they looked at the effects of different energy intakes and states of energy balance and their impact on muscle gain, strength gain, and skin fold thickness, which they use as a proxy for fat mass gain. To test this, they took resistance-trained individuals who were required to have at least 1 year of resistance training experience, defined as performing resistance training sessions at least twice per week, including the bench press and the squat, each at least once per week with no complete breaks from training longer than 2 weeks in succession. When it came to the actual study participants, most were early stage intermediates, but there were some competitive physique athletes and powerlifters within this population. So they use intermediate to advanced trainees in the study, which is quite applicable to many of you out there who, in this audience, who have already have some time training under your belts. Now, what they did was they put them through a maintenance phase where they went over macro tracking and got them to stabilize their weight for at least 2 weeks to determine their maintenance calorie intake. And then they divided them up into 3 different dietary condition groups. So one group was labeled the maintenance group, which ate at maintenance calories throughout the study and aimed to maintain between 1% plus or minus their body weight. The next group was labeled the mod group, which were put into a small surplus and assigned an energy intake target to hit a moderate rate of weekly body weight target of 0.4 to 0.6% every 2 weeks, or what that breaks down to is 0.2 to 0.3% every week using a 5% calorie surplus. And the last group was labeled the high group, who were assigned an energy intake target predicted to increase body weight by 1.4 to 1.6% every 2 weeks, or 0.7 to 0.8% per week. So this was quite an aggressive rate of gain, and they put them into a 15% calorie surplus to attempt to hit this targeted rate of gain target. Each group, regardless of their dietary assignment, were given a dietary guidance by a nutrition professional and required to consume at least a minimum of 1.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, a minimum of 40% of their energy intake on a daily basis from carbohydrates, and then a minimum of 20% of energy from fat. And all participants were also instructed to consume their food during 3 to 5 meals spread relatively evenly throughout the day while ingesting at least 20 grams of protein within 2 hours of finishing their training sessions. Now, throughout the entire 8-week training study, the study participants came into the lab 3 times per week to do a full body resistance training program. Now, onto the results. They found that when it came to body weight change throughout the 8 weeks, the maintenance group gained around 0.9 pounds, so a little bit under a pound. The moderate group gained 7.3 pounds on average, and the high group also gained around 7.3 pounds on average, which shows that the moderate group on average did not maintain a small surplus, and some of them instead ate in a larger surplus than prescribed. And this doesn't mean that everyone within the moderate group ate in a large surplus, but on average, both groups gained at the same amount of weight, which because some in the moderate group ate in a larger surplus than they were instructed to, and then some in the larger surplus group either ate less than intended or their NEAT levels increase and they experience an increase in their energy expenditure levels via positive metabolic adaptations that occur from eating more and building muscle. So they basically burned off some of the excess calories that they were taking in. Now, when it came to changes in muscle growth, which were measured as a percent change in muscle thickness, all three groups saw growth in the quads, biceps, and triceps on average, but there were no significant differences in gains between groups. So even the group eating around maintenance made gains. Now, when it came to strength, those in the larger surplus and in the high group made better bench press gains. But this is something that Eric kind of expanded out upon, that this could be kind of confounded just because they were so similar in terms of their actual increases in strength gain. The one area which did differ a lot between groups, though, were the sum of the skin fold thickness, which they use as a proxy for body fat gain. And these sums went slightly down in the maintenance group, so they kind of recomped. They went up in the moderate group, but they went up even more in the high group. So those in the small and large surplus gained more fat than those at maintenance, which is expected, as both of these groups were in an energy surplus as compared to eating at energy maintenance. In this study, they also did a regression between body weight gain and increases in skin fold thickness and one rep max and muscle thickness. By doing this, they found a strong relationship or strong evidence that increases in skin fold thickness were related to increases in body weight. So the more body weight someone gained during this 8-week period, the more likely they were to see increases in skin fold thickness. So essentially during short periods of time, like this 8-week study, the quicker you gain body weight, the more likely you are to gain body fat. They also found weak evidence that bicep thickness was also related to the increase in body weight. And the biceps were also the group that, or the muscle part, which was trained with the most amount of volume and was the area that grew the most, which makes sense as this was the muscle group which received the most direct and indirect training stimulus. So what this study found was that when intermediate and advanced trainees go into an 8-week training study, training just 3 days per week and eat at different calorie intake thresholds, there were no significant differences in tricep and quadricep thickness increases and one rep max strength gains. It's important to note that for trained individuals, it's difficult to gain a significant amount of muscle in 8 weeks. So, you know, this is just something I see in practice, but we also see this in the literature. And this is why generally I will set like a minimum threshold for anyone that's intermediate or advanced when they come to me for coaching, that I want a building phase of at least 4 months. So this would be double the duration of what this study showed. And so really when it comes down to it, this study is only looking at the context of 8 weeks of, you know, intermediate advanced trainees training only 3 days per week with relatively low volumes. So this doesn't mean that a surplus isn't beneficial for muscle gain, but more so that if you're training with a low training frequency and training volume, that eating at maintenance may be enough to see muscle growth progress. However, if you're someone who's looking to absolutely maximize muscle gain, you're most likely going to be training with more volume than these subjects did, which is when a surplus is going to be more beneficial to cover the energetic demands of your training and also the positive metabolic adaptations that occur when we're training in a progressive manner and building muscle at a more efficient rate. Now, the last thing I want to do is to go over and share on today's episode a case study of a client of mine who I've taken through a lean building phase. And despite being very advanced when he came to me, he's made some incredible progress, which you guys can see documented on my Instagram, which I did through a post which I made on February 12th. So this was a lean building phase that I did with a client of mine named Jeremiah Bayer, who I've been working with for over a year and a half at this point. I originally had mentored Jeremiah through one of my through my one-on-one private mentorship. And in June of 2022, he reached out to me and asked if I'd take him over his programming as he was in a mini cut and would like to have me take over, especially because he was getting ready for a vacation. So Jeremiah had already been training for well over a decade plus and training hard at that when we first started working together. And he's a coach in his own right. So he was already quite experienced when we linked up. And we initially were going to just do a mini cut for a vacation he had planned, but when the trip got canceled, we sat down and discussed his goals and decided to shift our focus to doing a photo shoot prep where he got down under 180 pounds and attained his best and leanest conditioning to date. So he got as leaner than ever. He had incredible conditioning and we really nailed that photo shoot prep. From there, I then transitioned him into a recovery diet phase to reverse the metabolic adaptation sustained from getting down to single-digit body fat into a lower body fat percentage than he had ever been in the past. Now, when we finished that phase, he was up from a little bit under 180 pounds. So he was around 179 pounds at the end of his diet to 189 pounds. And his biofeedback had improved as well as his health markers, especially his sex hormone profile. So I knew it was time to transition into a building phase and he'd be in a conducive environment to grow. So from the last week of December 2022 up until this past month, which is February of 2024, we focused on building muscle. That was our main goal and where a lot of our energy, effort, and time went towards. So over the past 14 months, Jeremiah is up 26 pounds, going from 189 pounds when we first started the building phase to an average of 215 pounds at the last week of this building phase. And if you look at the photos of his transformation that I posted on my page, you're going to see he's still lean and in great shape. But that's because I approached his phase, and the approach that we took was a slow and strategic one. And so I took it in a very calculated manner to be able to gain as much lean mass as possible while mitigating excess fat accumulation. And this was not only because this was his goals, but also when he first came to me, he had some insulin resistance and things of that sort. So I was very cautious and conscious of those things. And I wanted to really make sure that we were maximizing the body composition improvement while also maintaining metabolic health. And so throughout the last 14 months of building, I've constructed multiple specialization training cycles focused on bringing up both his chest and arms. And everything with his training and nutrition programming was periodized with one another in a progressive manner to enhance the progress he's been able to make. And he's made incredible physical progress, but one of the largest changes that has been, besides the physical one, has been a mental one. So he really, we've been able to increase his belief, his own like self-belief in his abilities and his potential. Because when Jeremiah first came to me for coaching, he was already well over a decade into training. But throughout our conversations, and this was something that we spoke about often, I could tell he was under the impression that his ability to gain a substantial amount of muscle was limited. And that was like two factor. Essentially, because he was advanced in training, he thought he was like close to his genetic ceiling. So that was the first issue. But the second one was he runs a business, so he has a lot of other exterior or external responsibilities. And so I could tell he thought it was just going to be a really slow process in terms of his ability to actually acquire muscle. And he probably, and it, like when we would speak, it almost felt like he thought he was more capped than he actually was. But I truly believed he had a lot more runway left for growth and had yet to maximize his muscle building potential, and knew that we can accomplish that despite his professional responsibilities. So throughout the phase, I've challenged him both in terms of his training and also what he was capable of juggling in terms of his physique and professional pursuits, while also being very calculated with the adjustments and changes I've made, which have been done better and better over time as I've learned his body more and more the longer that we've worked together, and also have been able to collect a ton of data. As Jeremiah is great as always on always getting his check-ins on time and filling them out to a T. So I've been able to collect and assess all the info that I need. Now, if we were to back calculate his rate of body weight gain per month, it comes out to an average of 1.85 pounds gain per month, which doesn't sound like much, but when you commit to the process, you stay consistent, and you nail the program, you can attain extremely impressive results where you literally change the entire look of your physique, which is what Jeremiah has been able to do. And you have to think about it in times like this. You might not see 1.85 pounds gain per month as a fast rate of gain, and it's not. It's conservative, it's slow and steady. But let's take that over 14 months. Let's take that over a long time period. People are only thinking in the here and now. They're thinking, what can I do in 4 weeks? What can I do in, 8 weeks? What can I do in 12 weeks? If we had only taken a 12-week building phase or an 8-week building phase, like in this Eric Helms study, Jeremiah would have gained, like 3.6 pounds. That wouldn't have been an impressive amount of muscle mass. But now he's up 26 pounds because we stayed in it a long time. We stayed committed to the process, and we delayed, instant gratification for long-term fulfillment and progress. So that's just an example of someone that has, this is an example of someone that I've taken through this lean building phase process and has had phenomenal results despite being advanced. So imagine someone that has much less training experience and knowledge than Jeremiah has. You guys can make an expedited rate of progress. So I shared just recently on one of the podcasts about a growth phase that I did with one of my clients from, excuse me, from Australia, Dimitri. Dimitri put on 44 pounds in 25 months. That's incredible. He looks like a different human being, to be honest with you. And that's not everyone's goal. However, if you are someone that wants to maximize muscle gain while also mitigating excess fat mass gain, it's something that's very possible. And you can either do it yourself, or if you need the help of a qualified professional, feel free to reach out to me because I would love to take you through this process. But as always, guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Chasing Clarity podcast and for listening to part three of my Nutrition for Muscle Gain series. And I'm probably going to be continuing this a few more parts because I have gotten a lot of inquiries, especially inquiries and questions, especially from my own clientele. So I'm most likely to be doing one or two more parts just to really summarize this out. And you guys know I like my series. But if you guys need anything from me, whether that be one-on-one coaching or Zoom consultations, please feel free to reach out to me through my email, which is brandoncruzfit or bdcruzfitness@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram, which is at brandoncruz underscore. And also, please remember to follow the show on both Spotify or iTunes. Leave a five-star review if possible. And then also be sure to share the episode on your stories so we can continue to reach more listeners and have a positive ripple effect on the industry, as my goal is truly to bridge the gap between research and information and practical application so that all of you out there can look better, feel better, function better, and live a life that includes walking around with a better body composition and a mindset of abundance. So as always, guys, hope you have a great week and enjoy your weekend.